Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're very kindly joined by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast once again.
Hello, Jonathan. Good to be back, albeit it's a grey and cloudy day down here in Seaford on the south coast.
It is indeed. I think it's getting to that time of the year, isn't it, when things start to get a little bit chillier.
Yeah, indeed.
Whilst things might be chilly outside, we are starting to heat up in the markets at the moment. We've seen the Dow Jones breached the 30,000 mark. That's obviously a record high. There's lots of factors at play there, of course. There's the vaccine news, Joe Biden coming in and him starting to make his initial changes and laying out plans for going forward. But we have discussed the US markets in some detail in recent podcasts. So I want to bring things back to the UK today, Alan, and look at the FTSE 100. Now, as I've just mentioned, the Dow Jones has reached all-time highs, breaching the 30,000 mark. However, we're still languishing here in London on the main index here in the FTSE 100, currently trading about 6,300, still some way off of its recent highs. Now, of course, we saw some tick up during the sort of swirling news about the vaccine, but we haven't got anywhere near the highs that we saw at the beginning of this year and indeed the record highs. Now, when we look at the FTSE 100, Alan, there's a high weighting towards commodities, yeah, and in particular oil. If you look at BP and Shell, they cut their dividends, so that's a big hit there for the index. But there's also another factor here at play with the inverse relationship to the pound. I mean, when we're sort of looking at the FTSE 100, I mean, do you think there is an opportunity for it to play catch up with its US counterparts, or do you think that the cloud of Brexit hanging over is just causing too much uncertainty for investors, indeed international investors, to start wading back into the FTSE 100 and some of their stocks there?
That's a very good question, Jonathan. I think there are a number of factors for that, but I don't see the FTSE as irreparably damaged and that it won't catch up with its US counterpart at some point. I think what we're seeing at present, it's a number of factors, really. I mean, firstly, of course, this morning we've had the warning from Rishi Sunak that the economic emergency in the UK has only just begun. We're seeing, we are going to see the ramifications of the lockdown policy, of the huge swathe of job losses that are just only starting to happen across the entertainment and leisure industry. Mitchell and Butler's, of course, the pub chain and restaurant chain, revealed 1,300 redundancies this morning. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. So obviously that's weighing on the industry. And clearly investors are seeking value in the FTSE 100 stocks at the moment. But are they going to invest in leisure stocks? But probably unlikely. I think if they've had a run in the last few days, that they'll probably be inclined to take profits and then just look to see how this plays out. But certainly on the resource front, we've seen a strong recovery in oil stocks and resource stocks. And let's not forget, of course, that on the oil stocks, BP and Shell have promised that they are moving or shifting their core businesses away from oil into renewables. And I think both have said that by 2030, probably getting on for half of the revenues that they generate will be from renewables. So they're very much moving with the times. But of course, they've had to trim their dividends in the interim, which has made them less attractive as investment stocks. But I think if there's any move to restate the dividends to former levels, then that will see a huge boost in the index. So I mentioned the job losses, I mentioned Rishi, and of course Joe Biden has, we've also got the spectre of Brexit in the background too. Joe Biden sort of straight on to Boris about the Northern Ireland border. So clearly, you know, his policies will start to weigh on the index as we go forward. But I think we've got a cocktail of negativity at the moment, which is keeping the index cap. But I think value will out eventually. And as I've said in previous podcasts, certainly the stocks that are going to drive the recovery, such as the resource stocks, the mining stocks, and of whom a significant chunk of the FTSE is made up, those stocks are going to be supplying China and will start to will probably offset to some degree any negativity we see from the leisure sector.
So, when we're looking at the FTSE 100 and the pound, Alan, there's been ever since Brexit a very strong inverse relationship. Now, looking at sterling against a dollar, currently trading at 133.64. Now, that's towards and almost the highest levels for this year. Now, that's probably kept a cap on the FTSE 100 due to the weighting of dollar earners within the index. A huge amount of earnings for the FTSE 100. The lion's share of earnings comes from overseas. What do you feel the risk is for disappointment for investors if we do see a Brexit deal and an outcome which is leaning towards the more positive side of things as opposed to a harder Brexit, that we see a pop higher in the pound, but that actually caps gains and could even see the FTSE 100 fall, and we don't see that sentiment follow through in stocks. Do you think that's a major risk, or do you feel that if we get a Brexit deal, that does remove the economic uncertainty to such an extent that this inverse relationship with the pound will take a back seat to overseas investors coming into UK equities and pushing it higher?
Yeah, I think that inverse relationship is key, and it's a finely balanced issue. But of course, if we do get a Brexit, you know, a good deal Brexit in inverted commas, then of course the pound will pop higher. But how much that will impact on the FTSE, particularly once we start to see, the huge global economies like China recovering, we're already seeing, you know, the appetite for raw materials starting to grow again as China continues its relentless growth drive. So I think there will be some jiggery pokery for sure. But overall, my expectation is that the demand in resource stocks will offset the strength in the pound, so we'll probably see an equilibrium somewhere along the way. But overall, once we see some signs of recovery in the UK economy at various levels, and we start to see pubs reopen and spending patterns starting to return to some semblance of normality, then I think there will be a minor relief rally on the back of that. So I think where we trade now, the FTSE still offers good value. It's not going to push back to over 7,000 for some time to come. But certainly, I don't see. We'll probably get a few dips from this point, but I don't see too much risk to the downside in the near term. But clearly, how the job situation and the economic emergency, as Rishi Sunak has highlighted today, once we see that start to play out, then we'll get a better idea.
Yes, of course, and this all comes back to the medical advancements as well. Everything, in my view, hinges on this vaccine and the rollout of the vaccine.
Indeed.
And how that impacts the economy. So an interesting subject, and one that we will come back to on the podcast as things develop there. But Alan, we've got three very interesting stocks that we're going to discuss today, quite diverse in what they do. So let's start off with one. Now, this is a company that we welcomed to the UK Investor Magazine virtual conference back in October. It's quite a diverse company in its portfolio. And what I do like about this firm is it's got a strong backing from its CEO. He's been regularly investing his own capital into the company. I saw an announcement yesterday that he just made a further purchase, I believe, in his SIP. Yeah. And that's Power Metal Resources, Paul Johnson, CEO there, that has been putting his own funds in there. But what's the latest operational update there, Alan, and what's happening on the ground?
Well, the one thing you can never accuse Power Metal of is not keeping its shareholders up to date. I mean, this is a company that I've seen a lot of companies communicate in different ways, and this is the best communicator. Paul Johnson and Power Metal Resources communicate better with the markets and shareholders, arguably, than any other company in its sector. And as you rightly say, Paul Johnson and his wife, Michelle, have backed the company throughout. And Paul's latest share purchase, which was just under 18,000 in his SIP yesterday, takes his own personal stake, he and his wife's stake, to over £300,000. So, you know, he has well and truly got skin in the game. But this is a multi-asset global mining exploration and development company. I could, if I started to talk in detail about all of the projects, we'd be here forever. So I'm going to basically go through and briefly summarize each one. Firstly, in Australia, we've all heard about Victoria Gold. In fact, there's another company that we've spoken about, ECR Minerals, are progressing a number of gold projects in the Victoria area. Power Metal has a joint venture with Red Rock Resources, Red Rock Australasia, which is a 50-50 joint venture. They have 11 license applications over 2,200 square meters in the Victoria area, focused very much around Ballarat as well. They're in the process of developing those licenses and getting the necessary permissions to go out and start drilling. And of course, in that region, we've got the Fosterville Gold Mine, which Craig Brown, the CEO of ECR Minerals, said is basically printing money. They have low production costs, and they're basically producing about 500,000 ounces of gold a year. So that's the Fosterville mine. There's the Ballarat mine, which is close to ECR's own projects, one of ECR's projects, and also the Power Metal Resource license areas. So again, huge potential to come from there. They then have a number of projects in Botswana. They have an organization called Kalahari Key Mineral Exploration owns the Malopo Farmers project, which is a huge nickel, copper, platinum and gold project, platinum metal group project in Botswana. And we've seen drilling updates. The company's progressed a drilling campaign in that region, and we're starting to get news back from the drilling and the developments in that area now. We also have a joint venture with Katoro Gold in the Haneti Nickel Project in Tanzania. And just on the Molopo Farms and Tanzanian project, I mean, these are vast territories, huge areas that have geological formations underground that, if they yield the minerals in commercial quantities, which all of the indications are to date that they will, any one of these projects by itself could dwarf the current Power Metals Resources market cap at 16 million. And I'm only just getting started on the number of projects, so you get some idea of where we're going. So I mentioned Tanzania, the Haneti Nickel Project. Then we go to the USA. We have the Alamo Gold Project, where there are a number of options on the territory formerly owned by the Frisco Gold Corporation. And again, sampling and work is underway there. We then heard more recently about the Canada Silver Project, the Silver Peak Project. There was an update yesterday. They've been taking the drilling rig to the target drill points, and bad weather had hampered basically getting the drill to the site. So they sent some engineers there with smaller, more portable rigs, and indeed work is underway. But in the sampling, they uncovered what they refer to as bonanza grade silver. Of course, this is, well, I say it's, it doesn't come as a great surprise. The Silver Peak project is based at the Eureka Victoria Silver Mine, which from those with an interest in history, it was the first Crown granted mineral property in British Columbia years and years ago. So it's fertile and ripe for further exploration, obviously using the modern mining and data gathering techniques. So we have this raft of projects that are underway, and the company is very well funded. It's raised a lot of money, but it's also raised many hundreds of thousands of pounds through warrant exercises. Warrants were issued earlier in the life of the company. And if you look at the share price performance to date, I mean, shares were trading back in April at 0.23p. They've hit highs of 2.6p, currently trading at just under 2p at 1.9p. So that gives Power Metals, with all the warrants and the shares in distribution, a 16 million market cap. And as I say, any one of these projects comes to fruition, that project alone will dwarf the current market cap. And I think that's the exciting thing about Power Metal. And that's also why Paul Johnson and also the chairman, Andrew Bell, are buying up shares at every opportunity they can. So, if you're looking to invest in a small cap mining company with exposure to a large number of diverse commodity projects around the world, I don't think there's any better company right now than Power Metal.
Indeed. So one important distinction, because we went in from FTSE 100 companies into Power Metal, Dorsey, this is a very different company. Yeah. Higher risk, higher reward potential there, 16 million cap there. And when you're looking at a company like this, in particular, Power Metal Resources, what's going to be driving shareholder returns going forward? I mean, do you think this is a company that's going to grow and develop its projects within itself and then look in the future to pay significant dividends for anybody that's getting in at this point? Or is this a company that's going to be looking primarily at share price appreciation developing those assets, potentially going into joint ventures or selling some of those assets and then distributing the cash to investors? Which way do you think this company is going to be going?
Yeah, very much the latter, Jonathan. I mean, you know, Power Metal is all about developing projects, and the value will drive the share price, you know, much higher from where we are now. As I've indicated, you know, any one of these projects could come to fruition, could dwarf the current market cap. But indeed, in regard to joint ventures, of course, we have the Red Rock Australasia joint venture, and there is talk already that could be spun out as a separate company. So, of course, if that does happen, then existing shareholders in the company will no doubt have a stake in that entity as well. So the value can manifest itself in many ways. So if, for instance, there are other joint ventures, or each of these projects becomes a separate joint venture that's spun out, then, of course, if you're a shareholder in Power Metal at that juncture, you will then own a stake in that new venture in the new market. And certainly Paul Johnson, the CEO, his primary focus is keeping the army of retail shareholders happy and up to date with information. And I mean, we're talking in terms of the number of announcements they put out. Some companies put out one announcement every 2 to 3 weeks. I mean, with Power Metal recently, it's been 2 or 3 announcements every day. So it's just a constant flow of information. And not only that, Paul is also appearing on the company's own podcast, webcasts, interviews. So he can articulate, because often in an announcement, the announcement format can be quite staid. So he can better articulate the findings and the information that's underlying the actual news development on that day. So yeah, Power Metal, it's a hold for capital gains. And I dare say, you know, some years down the road, they could become, you know, I mean, Rio Tinto and all the other FTSE 100 blue chip miners started somewhere. So who knows, you know, maybe in 10, 15 years time, Power Metal could be one of the established mining mining production groups with projects around the world worth billions of pounds and paying a chunky dividend. So yeah, there's everything to play for.
Yep, a very bright future there for Power Metals, and one I'm sure that we'll be covering again on the podcast. So moving on now, Alan, we've got one, and a particularly interesting company, I think, mainly because the sector that it's operating in. Of course, at the moment, we're seeing a big push towards sustainability. A lot of the focus at the moment is on fuel and energy, electric cars. That's where media and investor focus is on. But the company that we've got here is Itaconics. However, they're going to be looking and are looking indeed at everyday products and sustainability there. What's their main operations, Alan, and what's the recent updates from them?
Okay, so Itaconics, ITX, currently got a market cap of 8 million. Shares currently trading at 1.8p, been as high as 2.7 and as low as 0.26. Of course, that was back in March when everything fell off a cliff. But Itaconics produce sustainable, bio-based, environmentally friendly products derived from itaconic acid, bio-based polymers. And these, the polymers, of course, are used in multiple applications across for use in laundry, water softening, detergents, agriculture, industry. The company have worked and developed joint ventures. Croda, for instance, the FTSE 100 company that they have a joint venture ongoing with Croda, and they have also developed a series of biodegradable plastic products using the chemistry behind the itaconic acid. It's been I think if you speak to some investors who got into Itaconics a few years ago, they would say there've probably been a series of false dawns. But I think as with any company like this, everything has to be in place for things to start moving forward. There's the company announced in December last year a license agreement with New Wave to provide a new auto dishwasher sachet into the North American market. And certainly this was a key step forward, along with the biodegradable plastic collaboration with BioAsterix back in March. The company then, back in March this year, and that was part of the reason for the share price fall, warned on its funding position, and but said that it would defer salary, was receiving COVID relief. And then in June, it raised just under 2 million in a placing at 1.1p. And at that stage, the company reported strong momentum in its revenues was seeing, had seen a huge improvement in its net cash position, obviously from the fundraising, and then announced a very good set of full year results in December for the full year. But then upgrade and further from that, at the end of October, so a few weeks back, the company upgraded announced its half year results to June. So taking into account the COVID period, reported an 80% increase in revenues to $1.1 million, 130% increase in gross profits, and margin improved to 37% from 35%. Also a reduction in EBITDA loss to $0.6 million, so $600,000 from $1.2 million previously. The company has also received, to cover its US operations, a US government paycheck protection loan of $200,000. And obviously, with the fundraising as well, the chief executive, John Shaw, said at that point the company had really entered a new phase in commercial growth from 2020, and was seeing strong momentum in its business. And clearly, I think the acid test, excuse the pun, the test is going to be really in the next trading update that comes for the second half of 2020. And if there's evidence that growth is continuing, then clearly I think we're going to see a re-rating in the company. Also, a couple of weeks ago, the company appointed a new vice president of marketing and sales, formerly worked for Peter Kramer, Syovation and Abitech in the US, a lady called Mona Manning. So that's an encouraging sign. They've got a new VP in charge of sales. And I think in the forthcoming trading update, which we'll have maybe this side of Christmas, maybe just after Christmas, we should see some decent progress. But certainly, a company that I think has passed its crisis point and is now starting to generate revenues and could offer great potential for the future.
Indeed. I mean, just looking at the share price here, it could offer some value as well, having quite a significant drop from highs that we've seen within the last 2 years. And certainly those revenue figures do show that they are gaining traction, and with quite a substantial market to target. Very interesting to see, and something that I'd look forward to seeing how they progress through the second half of this year into next year. I'm sure the one that we will touch on again, Alan. So to finish off now, this is one that we have discussed a couple of times on the podcast for good reason. It's had a very, very strong 2020. Venture Life, Alan, I know it's one that we have looked into some detail, operates in a similar market to some extent as Itaconics, albeit at a different stage of the supply chain. But what's been the recent updates from them?
Okay, Jonathan. So Venture Life Group, VLG, of course, are that they refer to themselves as a self-care group, and international consumer healthcare. And of course, this is in oral care, skin care, pain relief, cosmetic treatment, a whole raft of products. And the company, it's got a really diverse range of products, and products that it sells directly and products that it sells through agencies. So that diversity really gives it resilience in regard to its cash flow and also its growth potential too. So it has offices in the UK and in the Netherlands. The Netherlands offices are basically the offices of PharmaSource, which is a pharmaceutical product distribution company that also has a nail care product that is distributed through Lloyd's Pharmacy here in the UK. The company also, Venture Life, also has a manufacturing centre in Milan in Italy. And of course, this was smack bang at the heart of the COVID crisis in Italy. But in all of its reporting and updating to the markets during the year, it has become patently obvious that manufacturing and distribution has been totally unaffected by the COVID crisis, which is really some achievement, you know, given the impact that COVID has had on everything else. So the company announced a really strong set of interims in September, and indeed I interviewed last week Sharon Collins, the Group Chief Commercial Officer. You can see that interview, of course, on our YouTube channel, on the Brand UK website. I interviewed Jerry Randall, the CEO, before that. Revenue growth of 80%, 65% organic to just under 17 million. 53% of those sales came from Venture Life's own brands. Gross profit up 97% to just under 7 million. And adjusted EBITDA up 368% to 3.5 million. So again, a very strong financial performance. And what's interesting is that the company have built a cash pile and reported cash of 6.6 million after the PharmaSource acquisition. So it basically purchased PharmaSource out of its cash pile and has got cash left over. A number of commercial milestones during the year: a distribution agreement in China that's worth 168 million euros to the company over 15 years. So that's a huge boost to the company. Strong second half order growth. Ultradex is the UK market leader for halitosis mouthwash. They have a joint venture with Alliance Pharma for the Kelecoat nail brand. They distributed over a million Disinplus hand sanitizer products to Asda. And also Dental, their own mouthwash, was launched by Boots. It is launched by Boots. But Dental has also made a name in its own right. Earlier in the summer, the company announced it was undertaking an in vitro trial. And in vitro, of course, means lab, in a lab environment, with Cardiff University to see the what efficacy CPC based mouthwash had on SARS-CoV-2 or the COVID virus. And they announced at the beginning of last week that the mouthwash trial had shown that the virus is completely eradicated within 30 seconds of putting the mouthwash in. So that was, of course, picked up by the media. I spoke to Sharon Collins about that last week, and we saw the subsequent rise in the share price and the drive further. Full trial results from that trial are going to be published early next year, and that's, of course, a human clinical study. Then, of course, at the end of last week, the company announced a placing to raise $34 million. Now, going back to the PharmaSource acquisition, of course, the company has made acquisitions to date from its own cash pile. But given this acceleration in revenue growth, it raised $34 million at 90p, and there was also a £2 million open offer, targeting three acquisitions known as Project Vulcan, Target A and Target B, which are in oncology support, oral care, and dermatology. So, of course, given this acceleration in growth, the Venture Life Group have identified a number of earnings accretive potential acquisitions to accelerate the growth in the group. And I think this is the company's strength. You know, it has it's highly cash generative. You know, it's got in a very strong cash position without any debt, and it's able to accelerate its growth at a dramatic rate of knots. So the money was raised at 90p, so slightly off the shares hit a high of £1.18 last week. But nonetheless, the shares are now trading above that at 95p. And I'm sure we're going to hear news on these acquisitions in the very near future. So it's a really strong investment proposition. There's something of a niche proposition, nonetheless. But again, I think given the spread of risk, given the diversity of the group as well, I think offers great growth potential for the future.
Yes, indeed. I mean, the figures here, if you're looking, you know, very crudely, if you annualise the recent adjusted EBITDA figures, they're trading at roughly 11 times EBITDA for the year, which is, you know, quite an attractive valuation, even given the recent rally that they've had. But Alan, and when you're sort of looking at this company, of course, you've been speaking to the senior management there.
Yes.
Had a very strong first half to the year given COVID, and you know, of course, they've been working on the rollout of more projects. I mean, the 80% revenue that we saw in increase in revenue for the first half, I mean, do you think that's something that can be replicated or even built in the second half and sort of following through to the first half of 2021? I mean, with the rollout of new products and going into new markets, I mean, is this something that could be sustainable in terms of that growth rate in revenue? Have they got that sort of the trajectory in growth outlined?
Absolutely. I see no reason why this growth won't continue, and B, won't accelerate, considering that they achieved this in possibly the most difficult trading year in recent history. I think it's the diversity of the product offering, and also the distribution channels they have, you know, through the major supermarkets, Asda, Boots, Superdrug, and so on, and also the pharmaceutical and drug chains across Europe. They've just got they've got a diverse revenue stream, and they see the potential to grow the business in making earnings accretive acquisitions. And you know, these are a lot of companies in this area do make very good money indeed, because once you've got a product that works in a particular niche, you've got steady sales there, steady sales growth. But often the growth process or the growth opportunities come as a result of leveraging up with integrating into a company that's larger, that's got bigger distribution channels, and so on. So there's a compelling logic behind their strategy here, and I think Jerry Randall and his team have done a very good job in bringing the company thus far. But yeah, I don't believe that revenues will slow at any time. Of course, you know, that isn't to say some areas of the business won't work, but I think they've got such a diverse spread of offering that if one part of the business doesn't work as well as hoped, then that slack could be taken up by another area. So yeah, a really strong growth proposition, I think, for 2021.
Of course, I mean, I think diversity of their products is key, and also the rollout of a number of new markets and obviously expansion there is going to make this a very interesting stock to watch in 2021, and one I'm sure that we will be looking at again after their next set of results. So that was Venture Life Group that we discussed there, trading under the ticker of VLG. Previously, we discussed Power Metal Resources, trading under the ticker of POW, and Itaconics trading on the ticker of ITX. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks again, Jonathan.
So just as a little announcement, we have recently just launched a new version of the UK Investor Magazine website. So do check that out. There is a new podcast section in there, in addition to a new revamped video section. So you can go back and have a look at some of the company presentations and interviews we've done over the last 6 months. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.